my stool. They had opened the folders I'd packed and spread out the contents, then moved on to my notebooks, passing them around and studying them. Cody had eventually lost interest and moved over to sit by me, his back to the table and elbows hitched up on it behind him. I had a job to do, I said. I decided to do it well. This is impressive, Tia said. She sat cross-legged on the floor. She had changed to jeans but was still wearing her blouse and blazer, and her short red hair was still perfectly styled. Tia held up one of my notebooks. It's rudimentary in organization, she said, and doesn't use standard classifications, but it is exhaustive. There are standard classifications? I asked. Several different systems, she said. It looks like you've got a few of the terms here that cross between the systems, like high epic, though I personally prefer the tier system. In other places, what you've come up with is interesting. I do like some of your terminology, like prime invincibility. Thanks, I said, though I felt a little embarrassed. Of course, there were ways of classifying epics. I hadn't the education or the resources to learn such things, so I'd made up my own. It was surprising how easy it had been. There were outliers, of course, bizarre epics with powers that didn't fit any of the classifications. But a surprising number of the others showed similarities. There were always individual quirks, like the glimmering of refractionary's illusions. The core abilities, however, were often very similar. Explain this to me, Tia said, holding up a different notebook. Hesitantly, I slid off my stool and joined her on the floor. She was pointing toward a notation I'd made at the bottom of the entry for a particular epic named Strong Tower. It's my Steelheart mark, I said. Strong Tower shows an ability like Steelheart has. I watch epics like that carefully. If they get killed or they manifest a limitation to their powers, I want to be aware of them. Tia nodded. Why didn't you lump the mental illusionists with the photon manipulators? I like to make groupings based on limitations, I said, getting out my index and flipping to a specific page for her. Epics with illusion powers fell into two groups. Some created actual changes in the way light behaved, crafting illusions with photons themselves. Others made illusions by affecting the brains of the people around them. They really created hallucinations, not true illusions. See, I said, pointing. The mental illusionists tend to be limited in similar ways to other mentalists, like those with hypnotism powers or mind control effects. Illusionists that can alter light work differently. They are far more similar to the electricity manipulation epics. Cody whistled softly. He'd gotten out a canteen and held it in one hand while still leaning back against the table.
Lad, I think we need to have a conversation about how much time you've got on your hands and how we can put it to better use.
Better use than researching how to kill epics? Tia asked with a raised eyebrow.
Sure, Cody said, taking a swig from his canteen. Think of what he could do if I got him to organize all of the pubs in town by brew.
Oh, please, Tia said dryly, turning a page in my notes.
Abraham, Cody said. Ask me why it's tragic for the young David to have spent so much time on these notebooks.
Why is it tragic for the boy to have done such research?
Abraham said, still cleaning his gun.
That's a very astute question, Cody said. Thank you very much for asking.
It is my pleasure.
Anyway,
Cody said, raising his canteen,
why do you want so badly to kill these epics?
Revenge, I said. Steelheart killed my father. I intend.
Yes, yes, Cody said, cutting me off. Y'all intend to see him bleed again and all that. Very dedicated and familial of you. But I'm telling you, that ain't enough. You've got passion to kill, but you need to find passion to live. At least that's what I think.
I didn't know how to respond to that. Studying Steelheart, learning about epics so that I could find a way to kill him, was my passion. If there was a place I fit in, wasn't it with the Reckoners? That was their life's work too, wasn't it?
Cody,
Prof said.
Why don't you go finish working on the third chamber?
Sure thing, Prof,
the sniper said, screwing on the lid of his canteen. He sauntered out of the room.
Don't listen too much to Cody, son,
Prof said, setting one of my notebooks on the stack.
He says the same things to the rest of us. He worries we'll focus so hard on killing the epics that we'll forget to live our lives.
He might be right, I said. I really haven't had much of a life other than this.
The work we do, Prof said, is not about living. Our job is killing. We leave the regular people to live their lives, to find joy in them, to enjoy the sunrises and the snowfalls. Our job is to get them there.
I had memories of the world before. It had only been 10 years ago, after all. It's just that it was difficult to remember a world of sunshine when darkness was all you saw each day. Remembering that time, it was like trying to recall the specifics of my father's face. You forget things like that gradually.
Jonathan,
Abraham said to Prof, slipping the barrel back into his gun.
Have you considered the things this boy said?
I'm not a boy, I said. They all looked at me, even Megan standing beside the doorway. I just wanted to note it, I said, suddenly uncomfortable. I mean, I'm 18. I've hit my majority. I'm not a child. Prof eyed me. Then, surprisingly, he nodded.
Age has nothing to do with it. But you've helped kill 2 epics, which is good enough for me. It should be for any of us. Very well,
Abraham said, voice soft.
But, Prof, we've spoken of this before. By killing epics like Fortuity, are we really achieving anything?
We fight back, Megan said. We're the only ones who do. It's important.
And yet,
Abraham said, snapping another piece onto his gun,
we are afraid to fight the most powerful. And so, the domination of the tyrants continues. So long as they do not fall, the others will not truly fear us. They will fear Steelheart, Obliteration, and Night's Sorrow. If we will not face creatures such as these, is there any hope that others will someday stand up to them?
The steel-walled room went quiet, and I held my breath. The words were nearly the same I had used earlier, but coming from Abraham's soft-spoken, lightly accented voice, they seemed to hold more weight. Prof turned to Tia. She held up a photograph. This is really Nightwielder? She asked me. You're sure of it? The picture was a prize of my possessions, a photograph of Nightwielder beside Steelheart on the day of annexation, just before his darkness had come upon the city. As far as I knew, it was one of a kind, sold to me by an urchin whose father had taken it with an old Polaroid camera. Nightwielder was normally translucent, incorporeal. He could move through solid objects and control darkness itself. He appeared often in the city, but was always in his incorporeal form. In this picture, he was solid, wearing a sharp black suit and hat. He had Asian features and black shoulder-length hair. I had other pictures of him in his incorporeal form. The face was the same. It's obviously him, I said. And the photo wasn't doctored, Tia said. That I couldn't prove. I can't promise it wasn't, though its being a Polaroid makes that less likely. Tia, he has to be corporeal some of the time. That photo is the best clue. But I have others, people who have smelled phosphorus and spotted someone walking by who matches his description. Phosphorus was one of the signs of him using his powers. I found a dozen sources that all match this idea. It's sunlight that makes the difference. I suspect it's the ultraviolet part of sunlight that matters. Bathed in it, he turns corporeal. Tia held the photo before her, contemplating it. Then she began scanning through my other notes on Nightwielder. I think we need to investigate it, John, she said. If there's a chance we can actually get to Steelheart, we can, I said. I have a plan. It will work.
This is stupidity, Megan cut in.
She stood by the wall with her arms crossed.
Sheer stupidity. We don't even know his weakness.
We can figure it out, I shot back. I'm sure of it. We have the clues we need.
Even if we did figure it out, Megan said, throwing a hand up into the air, it would be practically useless. The obstacles in even getting to Steelheart are insurmountable.
I locked eyes with her, fighting down my anger. I got the feeling she was arguing with me, not because she actually disagreed, but because she found me offensive for some reason. I began, but Prof interrupted me.
Everyone follow me, he said,
standing up. I shared a glare with Megan, and then we all moved, joining him as he walked toward the smaller room to the right of the main chamber. Even Cody made his way in from the third room. Unsurprisingly, he'd been listening. He wore a glove on his right hand. It glowed with a soft green light at the palm.
Is the imager ready?
Prof asked.
Mostly, Abraham said. It's one of the first things I set up.
He knelt beside a device on the floor connected to the wall by several wires. He turned it on. Suddenly, all of the metal surfaces in the room turned black. I jumped. It felt like we were floating in darkness. Prof raised a hand, then tapped on the wall in a pattern. The walls changed to show a view of the city, presenting it as if we were standing atop a 6-story building. Lights sparkled in the blackness, shining from the hundreds of steel buildings that made up New Cago. The old buildings were less uniform. The new buildings, spreading out onto what had once been the lake, were more modern. They had been built from other materials, then intentionally transformed to steel. You could do some interesting things with architecture, I'd heard, when you had that option.
This is one of the most advanced cities in the world, Prof said. Ruled by arguably the most powerful epic in North America. If we move against him, we raise the stakes dramatically, and we're already betting up to the limits of what we can pay. Failure could mean the end of the Reckoners completely. It could bring disaster, could end the last bit of resistance against the epics that mankind has left.
Just let me tell you the plan, I said. I think it will persuade you.
I had a hunch. Prof wanted to go after Steelheart. If I could make my case, he'd side with me. Prof turned to me, meeting my eyes.
You want us to do this? Fine. I'll give you your shot. But I don't want you to persuade me.
He pointed to Megan, who stood beside the doorway, her arms still crossed.
Persuade her.
13. Persuade her. Great, I thought. Megan's eyes could have drilled holes through, well, anything, I guess. I mean, eyes can't normally drill holes through things, so the metaphor works regardless, right? Megan's eyes could have drilled holes through butter. Persuade her? I thought. Impossible. But I wasn't going to give up without trying. I stepped up to the wall of glistening metal overlaid with the outline of New Cago. The imager can show us anything? I asked.
Anything the basic spy net watches or listens to? Abraham explained, standing up from the imaging device.
The spy net? I said, suddenly feeling uncomfortable. I walked forward. This device was remarkable. It made me feel as if we really were standing on top of a building outside in the city, rather than in a box of a room. It wasn't a perfect illusion. If I looked around closely, I could still see the corners of the room we were standing in, and the 3D imaging wasn't great for things nearby. Still, so long as I didn't look too closely and didn't pay attention to the lack of wind or sense of the city, I really could imagine I was outside. They were constructing this image using the spinet? That was Steelheart's surveillance system for the city. The means by which enforcement kept tabs on what the people in New Cago were doing. I knew he was watching us, I said, but I hadn't realized that the cameras were so extensive.
Fortunately,
Tia said. We've found some ways to influence what the network sees and hears, so don't worry about Steelheart spying on us. I still felt uncomfortable, but it wasn't worth thinking on at the moment. I stepped up to the edge of the roof, looking down at the street below. A few cars passed, and the imager relayed the sounds of their driving. I reached forward and placed my hand on the wall of the room, seemingly touching something invisible in midair. This was going to be very disorienting. Unlike the tensors, room imagers I'd heard of, people paid good money to visit imager films. My conversation with Cody left me thinking. Had we learned how to do things like this from epics with illusion powers? I began.
No, Megan said. If he has to convince me, then I'm driving this conversation.
She stepped up beside me.
But... Go ahead, Megan, Prof said.
I grumbled to myself and stepped back to where I didn't feel I was on the verge of a multi-story plummet.
It's simple, Megan said. There's one enormous problem in facing Steelheart.
One? Cody asked, leaning back against the wall.
It made him look like he was leaning against open air.
Let's see. Incredible strength, can shoot deadly blasts of energy from his hands, can transform anything non-living around him into steel, can command the winds and fly with perfect control. Oh, and he's utterly impervious to bullets, edged weapons, fire, radiation, blunt trauma, suffocation, and explosions. That's like three things, lass.
He held up four fingers. Megan rolled her eyes.
All true, she said, then turned back to me. But none of that is even the first problem.
Finding him is the first problem, Prof said softly.
He'd set out a folding chair, Tia as well, and the two were sitting in the center of the imaged rooftop.
Steelheart is paranoid. He makes certain nobody knows where he is.
Exactly,
Megan said, raising her hands and using a thumbs-out gesture to control the imager. We zoomed through the city, the buildings a blur beneath us. I wobbled, my stomach flip-flopping. I reached for the wall, but I wasn't certain where it was, and stumbled to the side until I found it. Abruptly, we halted, hanging in midair, looking at Steelheart's palace. It was a dark fortress of anodized steel that rose from the edge of the city, built upon the portion of the lake that had been transformed to steel. It spread out in either direction, a long line of dark metal with towers, girders, and walkways. Like some mashup of an old Victorian manor, a medieval castle, and an oil rig. Violent red lights shone from deep within the various recesses, and smoke billowed from chimneys, black against a black sky.
They say he intentionally built the place to be confusing, Megan said. There are hundreds of chambers, and he sleeps in a different one each night, eats in a different one for each meal. Supposedly, even the staff doesn't know where he'll be.
She turned to me, hostile.
You'll never find him. That's the first problem.
I swayed, still feeling as if I were standing in midair, though none of the others seemed to be having trouble.
Could we?
I asked nauseously, looking back at Abraham. He chuckled, making some gestures and pulling us back to the top of a nearby building. There was a small chimney on it, and as we landed, the chimney squished flat, becoming two-dimensional on the floor. This wasn't a hologram. So far as I knew, nobody had mimicked that level of illusion power with technology. It was just a very advanced use of six screens and some 3D imaging.
Right, I said, feeling steadier. Anyway, that would be a problem.
Except?
Prof asked.
Except we don't need to find Steelheart, I said. He'll come to us. He rarely comes out in public anymore, Megan said. And when he does, it's erratic. How in Calamity's fires are you going to...
Faultline, I said. The epic who had made the Earth swallow the bank on that terrible day when my father had been killed, and who had later challenged Steelheart.
David has a point, Abraham said. Steelheart did come out of hiding to fight her when she tried to take New Cargo.
And when Ide's hatred came here to challenge him, I said.
Steelheart met the challenge personally.
As I recall, Prof said, they destroyed an entire city block in that conflict.
Sounds like quite the party, Cody noted.
Yes, I said. I had pictures of that fight.
So you're saying we need to convince a powerful Epic to come to New Kago and challenge him, Megan said, her voice flat. Then we'll know where he's going to be.
Sounds easy.
No, no, I said, turning to face them, my back to the dark, smoldering expanse of Steelheart's palace. That's the first part of the plan. We make Steelheart think a powerful Epic is coming here to challenge him.
How would we do that? Cody asked.
We've already started, I explained. Now we spread word that Fortuity was killed by agents of a new Epic. We start hitting more Epics, leaving the impression that it's all the work of the same rival. Then we deliver an ultimatum to Steelheart that if he wants to stop the murder of his followers, he'll need to come out and fight. And he will come, so long as we're convincing enough. You said he's paranoid, Prof. You're right. He is. And he can't stand a challenge to his authority. He always deals with rival Epics in person, just like he did with Death Point all those years ago. If there's one thing that the Reckoners are good at, it's killing Epics. If we hunt down enough of them in the city in a short time, it will be a threat to Steelheart. We can draw him out, choose our own battlefield. We can make him come to us and walk right into our trap.
Won't happen, Megan said. He'll just send Firefight or Nightwielder.
Firefight and Nightwielder. Two immensely powerful high Epics who acted as Steelheart's bodyguards and right-hand men. They were nearly as dangerous as he was.
I've shown you Nightwielder's weakness, I said. It's sunlight, ultraviolet radiation. He doesn't know that anyone is aware of it. We can use that to trap him.
You haven't proven anything, Megan said. You've shown us he has a weakness, but every Epic does. You don't know it's the sunlight.
I glanced through his sources, Tia said.
It really does look like David might have something.
Megan clenched her jaw. If this came down to me convincing her to agree to my plan, I was going to fail. She didn't look like she'd agree no matter how good my arguments. But I wasn't convinced I needed her support, regardless of what Prof said. I'd seen how the other Reckoners looked to him. If he decided this was a good idea, they'd follow. I just had to hope that my reasoning would be good enough for him, even though he'd said I needed to convince Megan.
Firefight, Megan said. What about him?
Easy, I said, my mood lifting. Firefight isn't what he seems.
What does that mean?
I'll need my notes to explain, I said. But he'll be the easiest of the three to take down. I promise you that.
Megan made a face as if she were offended by this, annoyed that I wasn't willing to engage her without my notes.
Whatever, she said, then made a gesture spinning the room around in a circle and sending me stumbling again, though there was no momentum. She glanced at me, and I saw a hint of a smile on her lips.
Well, at least I knew one thing that broke through her coldness, nearly making me lose my lunch.
When the room stopped rotating, our view pointed upward at an angle. Every part of me said I should be sliding backward into the wall, but I knew it was all just done with perspective. Directly ahead of us, a group of three copters moved through the air, low, just above the city. They were sleek and black, with two large rotors each, the sword and shield emblem of enforcement painted in white on their sides.
It probably won't even come to Firefight and Nightwielder, she said. I should have brought this up first. Enforcement.
She's right, Abraham said. Steelheart is always surrounded by enforcement soldiers.
So we take them out first, I said. It's what a rival Epic would probably do anyway. Disable Steelheart's army so they could move in on the city. That will only help convince him that we're a rival Epic. The Reckoners would never do something like take on enforcement.
We wouldn't do it, Megan said, because it would be pure idiocy.
It does seem a little outside our capabilities, son,
Prof said, though I could tell I had him hooked. He watched with interest.
He liked the idea of drawing Steelheart out. It was the sort of thing the Reckoners did do, playing on an epic's arrogance. I raised my hands, imitating the gestures the others had been making, then thrust them forward to try moving the viewing room toward enforcement headquarters. The room lurched awkwardly, tipping sideways and streaking through the city to slam into the side of a building. It froze there, unable to continue into the structure because the spy net didn't look there. The entire room quivered, as if desperate to fulfill my demand, but uncertain where to go. I toppled sideways into the wall, then plopped down on the ground, dizzy.
Y'all want me to get that for you?
Cody asked, amused from the doorway.
Yeah, thanks. Enforcement headquarters, please.
Cody made the gestures and raised the room up, leveled it out, then spun it about and moved it over the city until we were hovering near a large black box of a building. It looked vaguely like a prison, though it didn't house criminals. Well, just the state-sanctioned kinds of criminals. I righted myself, determined not to look like a fool in front of the others, though I wasn't certain if that was possible at this point. There's one simple way to neuter enforcement, I said. We take out Conflux. For once, an idea of mine didn't prompt an outcry from the others. Even Megan looked thoughtful, standing just a short distance from me, her arms crossed. I'd love to see her smile again, I thought. Then immediately forced my mind away from that. I had to stay focused. This wasn't a time to let my feet get swept out from underneath me. Well, in a figurative sense, at least. You've considered this, I guessed, looking around the room. You hit Fortuity, but you talked about trying for Conflux instead.
It would be a powerful blow, Abraham said softly, leaning against the wall near Cody. Abraham suggested it, Prof said. He fought for it, actually, using some of the same arguments that you made, that we weren't doing enough, that we weren't targeting epics who were important enough.
Conflux is more than just the head of enforcement, I said, excited. They finally seemed like they were listening. He's a gifter.
A what? Cody asked.
It's a slang term, Tia said, for what we call a transference epic.
Yes, I said.
Great, Cody said. So what's a transference epic?
Don't you ever pay attention? Tia asked. We've talked about this.
He was cleaning his guns, Abraham said.
I'm an artist, Cody said.
Abraham nodded.
He's an artiste.
And cleanliness is next to deadliness, Cody added.
Oh, please, Tia said, turning back to me. A gifter, I said, is an epic who has the ability to transfer his powers to other people. Conflux has two powers he can give others, and both are incredibly strong, maybe even stronger than those of Steelheart.
So why doesn't he rule? Cody asked.
Who knows? I shrugged. Probably because he's fragile. He isn't said to have any immortality powers, so he stays hidden. Nobody even knows what he looks like. He's been with Steelheart for over half a decade, though, quietly managing enforcement. I looked back at enforcement headquarters. He can create enormous stores of energy from his body. He gives this electricity to team leaders of enforcement corps. That's how they run their mechanized suits and their energy rifles. No Conflux means no power armor and no energy weapons.
It means more than that, Prof said. Taking out Conflux might knock out power to the city.
What? I asked.
New Cargo uses more electricity than it generates, Tia explained. All those lights on all the time. It's a huge drain, on a level that would have been hard to sustain even back before Calamity. The new fractured states don't have the infrastructure to provide Steelheart with enough power to run this city. Yet he does.
He's using Conflux to augment his power stores, Prof said. Somehow.
So that makes Conflux an even better target, I said.
We talked about this months ago,
Prof said, leaning forward, fingers laced before him.
We decided he was too dangerous to hit. Even if we succeeded, we'd draw too much attention, be hunted down by Steelheart himself.
Which is what we want, I said.
The others didn't seem convinced. Take this step, move against Steelheart's empire, and they'd be exposing themselves. No more hiding in the various urban undergrounds, hitting carefully chosen targets. No more quiet rebellion. Kill Conflux, and there would be no backing down until Steelheart was dead, or the Reckoners were captured, broken, and executed. He's going to say no, I thought, looking into Prof's eyes. He looked older than I'd always imagined him being. A man in his middle years, with gray speckling his hair, and with a face that showed he had lived through the death of one era and had worked 10 hard years trying to end the next era. Those years had taught him caution. He opened his mouth to say the words, but was interrupted when Abraham's mobile chirped. Abraham unhooked it from his shoulder mount.
Time for reinforcement, he said, smiling.
Reinforcement? Steelheart's daily message to his subjects. Can you show it on the wall here? I asked.
Sure,
Cody said, turning the mobile toward the projector and tapping a button.
That won't be ne- Prof began.
The program had already started. It showed Steelheart this time. Sometimes he appeared personally, sometimes not. He stood atop one of the tall radio towers on his palace, a pitch-black cape spread out behind him, rippling in the wind. The messages were all pre-recorded, but there was no way to tell when. As always, there was no sun in the sky, and no trees grew in the city any longer to give an indication of the season either. I'd almost forgotten what it was like to be able to tell the time of day just by looking out the window. Steelheart was illuminated by red lights from below. He placed one foot on a low railing, then leaned forward and scanned his city, his dominion. I shivered, staring at him. Presented in large scale on the wall in front of me, my father's murderer, the tyrant. He looked so calm, so thoughtful in this picture. Long jet black hair that curled softly down to his shoulders. Shirt stretched across his inhumanly strong physique. Black slacks, an upgrade from the loose pants he'd worn on that day 10 years ago. This shot of him seemed like it wanted to present him as the thoughtful and concerned dictator, like the early communist leaders I'd learned about back in the factory school. He raised a hand, staring intently at the city beneath him, and the hand started to glow with a wicked power, yellow-white to contrast the violent red below. The power around his hand wasn't electricity, but raw energy. He built it up for a time, until it was shining so brightly the camera couldn't distinguish anything but the light and shadow of Steelheart in front of it. Then he pointed and launched a bolt of blazing yellow force into the city. The power hit a building, blasting a hole through the side, sending flames and debris exploding out the opposite windows. As the building smoldered, people fled from it. The camera zoomed in, making sure to catch sight of them. Steelheart wanted us to know he was firing on an inhabited structure. Another bolt followed, causing the building to lurch, the steel of one side melting and caving inward. He fired twice more into a building beside it, starting the innards there aflame as well, walls melting from the enormous power of the energy he threw. The camera pulled back and turned to Steelheart again, still in the same half-crouched stance. He looked down at the city, face impassive, red light from beneath, limning a strong jaw and contemplative eyes. There was no explanation of why he'd destroyed those buildings, though perhaps a later message would explain the sins, real or perceived, that the inhabitants were guilty of. Or perhaps not. Living in New Cago brought risks. One of them was that Steelheart could decide to execute you and your family without explanation. The flip side was that for those risks, you got to live in a place with electricity, running water, jobs, and food. Those were rare commodities in much of the land now. I took a step forward, walking right up to the wall to study the creature that loomed there. He wants us to be terrified, I thought. It's what this is all about. He wants us to think no one can challenge him. Early scholars had wondered if perhaps epics were some new stage in human development, an evolutionary breakthrough, I didn't accept that. This thing wasn't human. It never had been. Steelheart turned to look toward the camera, and there was a hint of a smile on his lips. A chair scraped behind me, and I turned. Prof had stood up and was staring at Steelheart. Yes, there was hatred there, deep hatred. Prof looked down and met my eyes. It happened again, that moment of understanding. Each of us knew where the other stood.
You haven't said how you'll kill him, Prof said to me. You haven't convinced Megan. All you've shown is that you have a fragile half of a plan.
I've seen him bleed, I said. The secret is in my head somewhere, Prof. It's the best chance you or anyone will ever have at killing him. Can you pass that up? Can you really walk away when you've got a shot? Prof met my eyes. He stared into them for a long moment. Behind me, Steelheart's transmission ended, and the wall went black. Prof was right. My plan, clever though it had once seemed to me, depended on a lot of speculation. Draw Steelheart out with a fake epic, take down his bodyguards, upend enforcement, kill him using a secret weakness that might be hidden in my memory somewhere. A fragile half-plan indeed. That was why I had needed to come to the Reckoners. They could make it happen. This man, Jonathan Phaedrus, could make it happen.
Cody, Prof said, turning. Start training the new kid with a tensor. Tia, let's see if we can start tracking Conflux's movements. Abraham, we're going to need some brainstorming on how to imitate a high epic, if that's even possible.
I felt my heart jump. We're going to do it?
Yes, Prof said. God help us. We are. Part 2.
14.
Now, y'all gotta be gentle with her, Cody said, like caressing a beautiful woman the night before the big caber toss.
Caber toss? I said as I raised my hands toward the chunk of steel on the chair in front of me. I sat cross-legged on the floor of the Reckoner hideout, Cody on the ground beside me, his back to the wall and legs stretched out in front of him. It had been a week since the hit on Fortuity.
Yeah, caber toss, Cody said.
Though his accent was purely Southern, and strongly that, he always talked as if he were from Scotland. I guessed his family was from there or something.
It's this sport we had back in the homeland, involved throwing trees.
Little saplings, like javelins?
No. The cabers had to be so wide that your fingers couldn't touch on the other side when you reached your arms around them. We'd rip them out of the ground, then hurl them as far as we could.
I raised a skeptical eyebrow.
Bonus points if you could hit a bird out of the air, he added.
Cody, Tia said, walking by with a sheaf of papers. Do you even know what a caber is?
A tree, he said. We use them to build show houses. It's where the word cabaret came from, lass.
He said it with such a straight face that I had trouble determining if he was sincere or not.
You're a buffoon,
Tia said, sitting down at the table, which was spread with various detailed maps that I hadn't been able to make sense of. They appeared to be city plans and schematics, dating from before the annexation.
Thank you,
Cody said, tipping his camo baseball cap toward her.
It wasn't a compliment.
Oh, you didn't mean it as one, lass, Cody said. But the word buffoon, it comes from the word buff, meaning strong and handsome, which in turn...
Aren't you supposed to be helping David learn the tensors? She interrupted. And not bothering me?
It's all right, Cody said. I can do both. I'm a man of many talents.
None of which involve remaining silent, unfortunately, Tia muttered, leaning down and making a few notations on her map.
I smiled, though even after a week with them, I wasn't certain what to make of the Reckoners. I'd imagined each pod of them as an elite special forces group, tightly knit and intensely loyal to one another. There was some of that in this group. Even Tia and Cody's banter was generally good-natured. However, there was also a lot of individuality to them. They each kind of did their own thing. Prof didn't seem so much a leader as a middle manager. Abraham worked on the technology, Tia the research, Megan information gathering, and Cody odd jobs, filling in the spaces with mayonnaise, as he liked to call it, whatever that meant. It was bizarre to see them as people. A part of me was actually disappointed. My gods were regular humans who squabbled, laughed, got on one another's nerves, and, in Abraham's case, snored when they slept, loudly.
"Now that's the right look of concentration," Cody said. "Nice work, lad. Y'all have got to keep a keen mind, focused, like Sir William himself, soul of a warrior."
He took a bite of his sandwich. I hadn't been focused on my tensor, but I didn't let on to that fact. Instead, I raised my hand, doing as I'd been instructed. The thin glove I wore had lines of metal along the front of each finger. The lines joined in a pattern at the palm and all glowed softly green. As I concentrated, my hand began to vibrate softly, as if someone were playing music with a lot of bass somewhere nearby. It was hard to focus with that strange pulsation running up my arm. I raised my hand toward the chunk of metal. It was the remnant of a section of pipe. Now, apparently, I needed to push the vibrations away from me, whatever that meant. The technology hooked right into my nerves using sensors inside the glove, interpreting electrical impulses from my brain. So Abraham had explained. Cody had said it was magic, and had told me not to ask any questions lest I anger the wee demons inside who make the gloves work and our coffee taste good. I still hadn't managed to make the tensors do anything, though I felt I was getting close. I had to remain focused, keep my hand steady, and push the vibrations out. "Like blowing a ring of smoke," Abraham had said, "or like using your body warmth in a hug, without the arms." That had been Tia's explanation. Everyone thought of it their own way, I guess. My hands started to shake more vigorously.
"Steady," Cody said. "Don't lose control, lad."
I stiffened my muscles.
"Whoa, not too stiff," Cody said. "Secure, strong, but calm. Like you're caressing a beautiful woman, remember?"
That made me think of Megan. I lost control, and a green wave of smoky energy burst from my hand and flew out in front of me. It missed the pipe completely, but vaporized the metal leg of the chair it sat on. Dust showered down and the chair went lopsided, dumping the pipe to the floor with a clang.
"Sparks," Cody said. "Remind me to never let you caress me, lad."
"I thought you told him to think of a beautiful woman," Tia said.
"Yeah," Cody replied. "And if that's how he treats one of them, I don't want to know what he'd do to an ugly Scotsman."
"I did it," I exclaimed, pointing at the powdered metal that was the remains of the chair leg.
"Yeah, but you missed."
"Doesn't matter," I said. "I finally made it work." I hesitated. It wasn't like blowing smoke. It was like singing from my hand.
"That's a new one," Cody said.
"It's different for everyone," Tia said from her table, head still down.
She opened a can of cola as she scribbled notes. Tia was useless without her cola.
"Using the tensors isn't natural to your mind, David. You've already built neural pathways, and so you have to kind of hotwire your brain to figure out what mental muscles to flex. I've always wondered if we gave a tensor to a child, if they'd be able to incorporate using it better, more naturally, as just another kind of limb to practice with."
Cody looked at me. Then he whispered,
"We demons. Don't let her fool you, lad. I think she works for them. I saw her leaving out pie for them the other night."
Trouble was, he was just serious enough to make me question whether he really believed that. The twinkle to his eye indicated he was being silly, but he had such a perfectly straight face. I took off the tensor and handed it over. Cody slipped it on, then absently raised a hand, palm first, to the side and thrust it outward. The tensor began vibrating as his hand moved, and when it stopped, a faint smoky green wave continued on, hitting the fallen chair and the pipe. Both vaporized to dust, falling to the ground in a puff. Each time I saw the tensors work, I was amazed. The range was very limited, only a few feet at most, and they couldn't affect flesh. They weren't much good in a fight. Sure, you could vaporize someone's gun, but only if they were very close to you, in which case taking the time to concentrate and fight with the tensors would probably be less effective than just punching the guy. Still, the opportunities they afforded were incredible. Moving through the bowels of New Kago's steel catacombs, getting in and out of rooms. If you managed to keep the tensor hidden, you could escape from any bond, any cell.
You keep training, Cody said. You show talent, so Prof will want you to get good with these. We need another member of the team who can use them.
Not all of you can? I asked, surprised. Cody shook his head.
Megan can't make them work, and Tia's rarely in a position to use them. We need her back giving support while on missions, so it usually comes down to Abraham and me using them.
What about Prof? I asked. He invented them. He's gotta be pretty good with them, right? Cody shook his head.
Don't know. He refuses to use them. Something about a bad experience in the past. He won't talk about it.
Probably shouldn't. We don't need to know.
Either way, you should practice.
Cody shook his head and took off the tensor, tucking it into his pocket.
What I'd have given for one of these before.
The other pieces of Reckoner technology were awesome, too. The jackets, which supposedly worked a little like armor, were one. Cody, Megan, and Abraham each wore a jacket, different on the outside, but with a complicated network of diodes inside that somehow protected them. The dowser, which told if someone was epic, was another piece of such technology. The only other piece I'd seen was something they called the harm sway, a device that accelerated a body's healing abilities. It's so sad, I thought, as Cody fetched a broom to clean up the dust. All of this technology, it could have changed the world if the epics hadn't done that first. A ruined world couldn't enjoy the benefits.
What was your life like back then? I asked, holding the dustpan for Cody.
Before all of this happened, what did you do?
You wouldn't believe me, Cody said, smiling.
Let me guess, I said, anticipating one of Cody's stories. Professional footballer, high-paid assassin and spy?
A cop,
Cody said, subdued, looking down at the pile of dust.
In Nashville.
What? Really? I was surprised. Cody nodded, then waved for me to dump the first pile of dust into the trash bin while he swept up the rest of it.
My father was a cop, too, in his early years, over in the homeland. Small city. You wouldn't know it. He moved here when he married my mother. I grew up over here. Ain't never actually been to the homeland. But I wanted to be just like my pa, so when he died, I went to school and joined the force.
Huh, I said, stooping down again to collect the rest of the dust. That's a lot less glamorous than I'd been imagining.
Well, I did take down an entire drug cartel by myself, you understand?
Of course.
And there was the time the President's Secret Service were shuttling him through the city, and they all ate a bad mess of scones and got sick, and we in the department had to protect him from an assassination plot. He called over to Abraham, who was tinkering with one of the team's shotguns. It was them Frenchies who were behind it, you know? I'm not French, Abraham called back. I'm Canadian, you slunts.
Same difference, Cody said, then grinned and looked back at me.
Anyway, maybe it wasn't glamorous, not all the time, but I enjoyed it. I like doing good for people. Serve and protect. And then?
Then? I asked.
Nashville got annexed when the country collapsed, Cody explained. A group of five epics took charge of most of the South.
The Coven, I said, nodding. There's actually six of them. One pair are twins.
Ah, right. Keep forgetting that y'all are freakishly informed about this stuff. Anyway, they took over and the police department started serving them.
If we didn't agree, we were supposed to turn in our badges and retire. The good ones did that. The bad ones stayed on, and they got worse.
And you? I asked. Cody fingered the thing he kept at his waist, tied to his belt on the right side. It looked like a thin wallet. He reached down and undid the snap, showing a scratched but still polished police badge.
I didn't do either one, he said, subdued. I took an oath, serve and protect. I ain't going to stop that because some thugs with magic powers start shoving everybody around. That's that.
His words gave me a chill. I stared at that badge, and my mind flipped over and over like a pancake on a griddle, trying to figure out this man, trying to reconcile the joking, storytelling blowhard with the image of a police officer still on his beat, still serving after the city government had fallen, after the precinct had been shut down, after everything had been taken from him. The others probably have similar stories, I thought, glancing at Tia, who was busy working away, sipping her cola. What had drawn her to fighting what most would call a hopeless battle, living a life of constant running, bringing justice to those the law should have condemned, but could not touch? What had drawn Abraham, Megan, the professor himself? I looked back at Cody, who was moving to close his badge holder. There was something tucked behind the plastic opposite it in the holder, a picture of a woman, but with a section removed, a bar shape that had contained her eyes and much of her nose. Who was that?
Somebody special, Cody said.
Who? He didn't answer, snapping the badge holder closed. It's better if we don't know or ask about each other's families, Tia said from the table. Usually a stint in the Reckoners ends with death, but occasionally one of us gets captured. Better if we can't reveal anything about the others that will put their loved ones in danger. Oh, I said. Yeah, that makes sense. It just wasn't something I'd have considered. I didn't have any loved ones left.
How's it going there, lass?
Cody asked, sauntering over to the table. I joined him and saw that Tia had spread out lists of reports and ledgers. It's not going at all, Tia said with a grimace. She rubbed her eyes beneath her spectacles. This is like trying to recreate a complex puzzle after being given only one piece. What are you doing? I asked. I couldn't make sense of the ledgers any more than I'd been able to make sense of the maps. Steelheart was wounded that day, Tia said, if your recollection is correct. It is, I promised.
People's memories fade, Cody said.
Not mine, I said. Not about this. Not about that day. I can tell you what color tie the mortgage man was wearing. I can tell you how many tellers there were. I could probably count the ceiling tiles in the bank for you. It's there in my head, burned there. All right, Tia said. Well, if you are correct, then Steelheart was impervious for most of the fight and only harmed near the end. Something changed. I'm working through all possibilities. Something about your father, the location, or the situation. The most likely seems the possibility you mentioned, that the vault was involved. Perhaps something inside it weakened Steelheart, and once the vault was blown open, it could affect him. So, you're looking for a record of the bank vault's contents? Yes, Tia said, but it's an impossible task. Most of the records would have been destroyed with the bank. Off-site records would have been stored on a server somewhere. First Union was hosted by a company known as Dory Jones LLC. Most of their servers were located in Texas, but the building was burned down 8 years back during the Ardra riots. That leaves the off chance that they had physical records or a digital backup at another branch, but that building housed the main offices, so the chances of that are slim. Other than that, I've been looking for patron lists, the rich or notable who were known to frequent the bank and have boxes in the vault. Perhaps they stored something in there that would be part of the public record. A strange rock, a specific symbol that Steelheart might have seen. Something. I looked at Cody. Servers? Hosted? What was she talking about? He shrugged. The problem was, an epic weakness could be just about anything. Tia mentioned symbols. There were some epics who, if they saw a specific pattern, lost their powers for a few moments. Others were weakened by thinking certain thoughts, or eating certain foods, or eating the wrong foods. The weaknesses were more varied than the powers themselves.
If we don't figure out this puzzle, Tia said, the rest of the plan is useless. We're starting down a dangerous path, but we don't yet know if we'll be capable of doing what we need to at the end. That bothers me greatly, David. If you think of anything, anything, that could give me another lead to work on, speak of it.
I will, I promised.
Good, she said. Otherwise, take Cody and please let me concentrate.
You really should learn to do two things at once, lass, Cody said, like me.
It's easy to both be a buffoon and make messes of things, Cody, she replied. Putting those messes back together while dealing with said buffoon is a much more difficult prospect. Go find something to shoot, or whatever it is you do.
I thought I was doing whatever it is I do, he said absently.
He stabbed a finger at a line on one of the pages, which looked like it listed clients of the bank. It read, Johnson Liberty Agency.
What are you?
Tia began, then cut herself off as she read the words.
What?
I asked, reading the document. Are those people who stored things at the bank?
No, Tia said. This isn't a list of clients. It's a list of people the bank was paying. That's...
The name of their insurance company, Cody said, smirking.
Calamity, Cody, Tia swore. I hate you.
I know you do, lass.
Oddly, both of them were smiling as they said it. Tia immediately began shuffling through papers, though she noticed, with a dry look, that Cody had left a smudged bit of mayonnaise from his sandwich on the paper where he'd pointed. He took me by the shoulder and steered me away from the table.
What just happened? I asked.
Insurance company, Cody said. The people who First Union Bank paid piles of money to cover the stuff they had in their vault.
So that insurance company
would have kept a detailed day-by-day record of just what they were insuring, Cody said with a grin. Insurance people are a wee bit anal about things like that. Like bankers. Like Tia, actually. If we're lucky, the bank filed an insurance claim following the loss of the building. That would leave an additional paper trail.
Clever, I said, impressed.
Oh, I'm just good at finding things that are hovering around under my nose. I have keen eyes. I once caught a leprechaun, you know?
I looked at him skeptically. Aren't those Irish?
Sure. He was over in the homeland on an exchange basis. We sent the Irish 3 turnips and a sheep's bladder in trade.
Doesn't seem like much of a trade.
Oh, I think it was a sparking good one, seeing as how leprechauns are imaginary and all. Hello, Prof. How's your kilt?
As imaginary as your leprechaun, Cody,
Prof said, walking into the chamber from one of the side rooms, the one he'd appropriated as his thinking room, whatever that meant. It was the one with the imager in it, and the other reckoners stayed away from it.
Can I borrow David?
Please, Prof, Cody said. We're friends. You should know by now that you needn't ask something like that. You should be well aware of my standard charge for renting one of my minions. 3 pounds and a bottle of whiskey.
I wasn't sure if I should be more insulted at being called a minion or at the low price to rent me. Prof ignored him, taking me by the arm.
I'm sending Abraham and Megan to Diamond's place today.
The weapons dealer? I asked, eager. They'd mentioned that he might have some technology for sale that could help the Reckoners pretend to be an epic. The powers manifested would have to be flashy and destructive to get Steelheart's attention.
I want you to tag along, Prof said. It will be good experience for you. But follow orders. Abraham is in charge. And let me know if anyone you meet seems to recognize you.
I will.
Go get your gun, then. They're leaving soon.
15.
What about the gun? Abraham said as we walked. The bank vault contents. Those could be a false lead, could they not? What if there was something special about